today we're going to do an episode and a shout out. I guess you can call it a shout out. It's more of a shout down to a person that I don't understand how he even has any ratings at all. The poll numbers show that people know he's around and what he's doing. A guy that if he got his way, the world in which you know and the life that you have would be vastly destroyed and just, it would be a train wreck. Some of the principles he follows are so diametrically opposed to what you would consider a decent lifestyle is amazing. So Bernie Sanders, do you even know what day it is?
Hump day, yeah!
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I am a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road.
I was looking again on Facebook, and it had Saul Alinsky's rules to create a socialist society. And so I'm going to kind of read through that, and maybe we can get an understanding of just what the hell is going on. And it's pretty simple, actually. It's How to Create a Socialist State by Saul Alinsky. Well, as a free American that believes in freedom and liberty, in my ability to live my life and to make the kind of money I want and to spend it on the items I want, that seems pretty radical. And you're just like, oh, one of those kook whack jobs, you know, Saul Alinsky. Why would they even write that? Well, in his list here, it says, there are 8 levels of control that must be obtained before you are able to create a socialist state. The first is the most important. So here's a person out there that wants to create something that is diametrically opposed to most Americans. Anyone that wants freedom and liberty, actually, not just in America. So number one is healthcare. Control healthcare and you control the people. Number two, poverty. Increase the poverty level as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you are providing everything for them. That sounds kind of diabolical, actually, you know, to where you're going to set up something that actually creates poverty so you can control people. That just doesn't even sound normal thinking to an average independence-loving person. Number three, debt. Increase the debt to an unsustainable level. That way you are able to increase taxes and this will produce more poverty. So now they're starting to hold each other up here. Gun control. Remove people's ability to defend themselves from the government. That way you are able to create a police state. I'm just going to read through them and then maybe we'll talk about them a little bit, because this really is just mind-numbing, actually. Welfare. Take control of every aspect of their life. Food, housing, income, everything. So number six is education. Take control of what people read and listen to. Take control of what children learn in school. Think Common Core. Religion. Remove the belief in God from the government and schools. And number eight, class warfare. Divide the people into wealthy and poor. This will cause more discontent, and it will be easier to tax the wealthy with the support of the poor. Now, this is Saul Alinsky, so it's not really old, but I'm sure he gets a lot of these steps or guidelines from the Communist Manifesto, because you can see this is not a 100-year-old document. But when you look at how communism throughout history and control of people throughout all eternity, you can put this list together pretty easy and go, oh, well, this is how you need to do it to accomplish this. So this is a more revised list by Saul Alinsky of what history has taught us to this point. So there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. You already know how it works and how you can make it better by learning from the past. So to me, I'm reading this thinking, this is really what, you know, most of our government is trying to do right now. And just hearing them be read triggers something in each one. You're like, holy crap, that's happening. Oh, you know, wow, I saw that just yesterday. So we can look at it and go, okay, we know Obama is a Saul Alinsky kind of guy. He studied Rules for Radicals. He said it in the campaign. He's a community organizer. This is all pretty well known. I'm not, you know, saying Obama's the devil and it can't be proved. No, these are things he said. So I can take him at face value and take his word for it. Pretty easy. A guy says, I hate you, I want to kill you. You take their word for it and you stand guard. You're like, holy crap. You might not be preemptive and attack first, but you know it's coming. So, you know, Obama has said these things. So that's not hard to understand. Now, we know that, you know, there's been the Times article on we're all socialists now. You got, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, running as a socialist in the Democrat Party. Now, that doesn't mean all Democrats are socialists. But all Democrats do believe in these eight things that I've read by Saul Alinsky. So once again, if we put on our judge's robe and we look at this evidence, we can determine that this is important to the case at hand. And we can filter it that way by looking at both sides of the argument and looking at the overall case. And then we can take off the judge's robes and put on our jurist hat and determine, you know, what this all means. And this is why it's so important to be more aware as an American than just to run around bathing in the avalanche and the flood of basically, I don't even know what to call social media. I mean, is it cannon fodder? No, because that's, you know, something your enemy might throw against you to distract you. This is just people posting things going, oh, look at this. Oh, look at that. Here's a kitty. Here's a dog. Here's a unicorn. Here's a rainbow. But it shows you, I guess, the pulse of America. You know, if you're a judge and you're allowing jurors to be selected, you might or might not want certain people on the jury, especially if you're a lawyer for the defense or the prosecution. You go, we don't want that person there. We do want this person there. So once again, we have to determine, you know, who do we want and what information are we going to accept? Because it's out there and it's loud. It's like white noise. When I worked in commercial buildings that had PA systems, for days they would run these white noise tests and they would go around balancing the sound and making sure it mixed at the ear level for certain rooms and stuff. And it was just a static, you know, annoying, actually, you know, for working in it. That's why I'd wear headphones and crank up my stereo, because I just didn't, you know, it was so much noise. But from that noise, they could gather, you know, what do they call that? You know, the sound bouncing off the walls, where it's mixing, how it's going to sound best, to where if you're standing in this part of the room, which is, you know, that room's purpose, where will the sound be best? How to angle the speakers and the cones and the cone shape. So the people blasting this white noise knew how to use it and what it was for. To me, as an untrained audio expert, just thought it was annoying. And that's when you look at social media, it's a lot of white noise. And through that, you can determine where it's hitting, how it's being perceived, how it's being heard. And don't think your enemies, people that put together a list like this, aren't using that information also. Now, you can't change anything, and shutting down Facebook and social media would just be stupid. They would do it, the enemy, because once they get to where they want to be, then naturally freedom is not their end goal. So then they could take that away from you, and then you'd sit there and go, but why? I'm a good little lackey. You know, why are you taking away all my toys? And in kind of preparing for some of this, I guess, episode, I looked at a a lot of socialist websites. I thought, well, that'll probably get me on some watch list. No, it'll probably get me email from the Democrat Party now. But looking at it, I was like, you know, they paint this really nice picture of what socialism would look like. And it started out with, you know, basically going to work every day, and you have to get up and your alarm clock goes off, and you got to buy a ticket to get to the job, and you have to all these things. And I couldn't even read it because it was just such spin. Because, you know, they can paint a shit sandwich to look like a hoagie, but it's still a crap sandwich no matter what. That's how it's going to taste. So they make it sound like in a socialist society, you don't have to get up and go to work. No, we've seen all throughout history that once it becomes socialism, then you still go to work every day. You might not have to buy a ticket because transportation is provided by the state, but you still get up and go to work. And really, socialism is just industry run and controlled by government. Now, it slides into communism, which is the top tier of just screwed. But socialism is kind of like the first marketing strategy to where you can go, look, you don't have to worry about your alarm clock going off anymore. And you don't have to worry about buying a ticket so you can actually get on the bus so you can go to work. Because if you can't afford a ticket, how do you get to go to work? So it's the first phase in the marketing strategy. And as I read all this, I thought, every one of these things just sounds so warm and fuzzy. But the reality of it is it doesn't change the fact that you as a person still will be going to work. You will still need to eat. You will still need to do all these things. You might not have to worry about where you get the food because now it's provided by the government. But maybe a lot of my listeners don't remember some of the things that I saw growing up where there were lines in Russia where people had to stand in line to get toilet paper. They didn't have to worry about buying it, but they couldn't get it. And so in a socialist and in a communist government, it's not organic anymore. It's like a sterile greenhouse if you look at it like an economy as nature. It's all in the greenhouse, and the only things that grow in that greenhouse are what the government plants. So the government didn't put a high enough priority on toilet paper. So you stood in line for it. And you weren't free to just go buy 100, 200 rolls at Costco so you would have it, because there wasn't enough of it. And the reason there wasn't enough of it, because all these people that didn't have to buy a ticket to go to work really didn't give a damn if they showed up to work or not, because their livelihood wasn't getting better. They were just literally a cog in the wheel and in this machine. So you just go and they say, you're now a toilet paper worker. And you're like, well, yeah, but I have a master's degree in this. And they're like, you work on the toilet paper. Don't worry about it. We're going to feed you. So the initiative to do better goes away. And I've talked to people that have lived in socialist countries. And if you read of any of Ayn Rand's books, mainly the one where she tells a story about a woman growing up in when Russia slid into communism. Before that, they had a vibrant economy. People were free. They were a great country. And then as they slid into, and as you read the book, you just see the tyranny, and you see these eight things that Saul Alinsky talks about happening one at a time. And how their life goes from a wealthy family to dirt poor, doing things that are illegal now in the black market to just have enough money to buy a little extra. Because in a communist or socialist society, it doesn't mean there's not people of wealth still. You know, they will talk about how bad wealth is, but the people that shove it down your throat are going to be highly wealthy people. They're going to have everything they want. So one part of the book, she's talking about just getting some perfume because the people in France have the greatest perfume. And all her friends in college are like, oh, how decadent. You know, why would anyone even want that? Those French are so evil. But there was still a desire for that. But the rich people in Russia had perfume. They had lipstick. They had all this stuff. So it's a great book, and you'd want to read some of those things that aren't just presented by the other side, because that's where your judge's hat has to kick in and your jury hat and go, that sounds really great, but the deeper I dig, the more I find out this is just a cock and bull story, or whatever that expression is. So what I was thinking is, if you look at these things, I mean, you can read them and go, oh, that sucks. What a bunch of shit. But this is their game plan. Now, if you have a battle going on, you know, it would be so much easier if you knew what they were doing. And usually that's why, like even in pro football and stuff and in baseball, they have these signs, like the catcher will do these signs. And even if people are watching, they don't know what they are, because you don't want to give away your strategy to the other side. Well, we have their strategy. They want to control healthcare. And if you control healthcare, you control the people. You control whether they get treated or not if they're sick. Now, trust me, the elite will always be taken care of. But you, the cog, they don't care. Once you reach a certain age of production and you're no longer valuable to them, it's like a worn-out tool. Well, you just get another one. And they can do that. You can't. You know, you wear out your tools, you better rebuild them, unless you got a lot of money. So this is their game plan. Poverty. Increase poverty levels as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you are providing everything for them. Do you see that happening? Of course you do. Now, they blame it on, you know, the system, and they talk about their war on poverty. But if you study the results of that war on poverty, it's a bigger misery and failure than the war on Vietnam. And they call that a debacle. So this war on poverty is just imaging. It's just to show you they care. While they're doing it, they act like they care. And the reason we're creating poverty, because they don't call it creating poverty, they go, the reason we're fighting poverty is because look how horrible this is. And then they're making it possible through other programs for poverty to become greater. And it's actually quite maniacal if you can look at it and go, these are the rules and the things that they will do to bring about a socialist state. And this is their game book. And all we have to do is look at it. So if you look at healthcare, it was shoved down our throat by an illegitimate group with demon pass, or whatever they call that. It wasn't ratified by the states. It's not constitutional. We've allowed it to become the law because we as jurors were too busy maybe trying to stay out of poverty to pay attention. And so through this flood of trash that they shove and pour and the white noise going on, it's very hard to focus on a key issue because we don't know what they are. Because with healthcare, they threw so much mud in the water that most Americans, even that do pay attention, couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. But the bottom line was, we have a lot of poor people, which they created, that go to the emergency room because they can't afford a doctor. And so that cost, because they don't pay the bill then, because they're poor, gets passed on to the other patients and people and to the taxpayer to pick up the tab and balance the ledger, I guess. So what we're going to do is mandate that everyone has insurance, even the poor person. So when the poor person goes in there, he has an insurance card, which is paid for by the taxpayers. So nothing changed. It's just the verbiage. So it was hard to see what was happening until it was too late. So you're not going to fix it always by understanding unless you're an active participant. Now, it's become quite hard to be an American nowadays, because it used to be pretty easy. You just hung out and you did your work and the things you loved and what you enjoyed. And then these people we had elected did their job that we told them to do. Well, now they have these schemes, see, like these eight things that they want to do. And we talked about poverty. You know, it's horrible that their whole goal, I mean, this is their how to create a socialist state. Increase the poverty levels as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you are providing everything for them. Well, that's, I mean, if someone told me, I'm gonna burn your house down because it's easier to control you when you don't have a home, you'd think, what a dick. They just said it. This is what our plan is, to increase poverty. So then their number three thing is debt. Increase the debt to unsustainable levels. Well, you think, well, they're doing that. Why would they do that? That way, you are able to increase taxes. And this will produce more poverty. Oh, so all this bullshit about the debt ceiling and all that and increasing taxes is so we can create more poverty. It's no other thing. It's not all the minutiae you see and read about in social media. It's to create more poverty. So I don't need to have big debates on social media about this guy said that and that guy said that. And why do you think they're doing it? They just told us we're doing this to win the game. Here's our game plan. Now, number four is the key one. And this is their sticking point, because if America didn't have the Second Amendment, this we wouldn't even be having this conversation. There would be no social media. There would be no podcasts. There would be no bloggers. No free speech and open conversations. So gun control. Remove people's ability to defend themselves from the government. So they understand why gun control, I mean, why the Second Amendment's there. It's for free patriots to defend themselves against the tyrannical government. And it even says it in their writings. Gun control. Remove the people's ability to defend themselves from the government. That way you are able to create a police state. So all this talk about mass shootings and background checks and a national registry and all that stuff has nothing to do with the safety of your children or mine. It has to do with a police state and the fact that you can no longer fight against your government. Now, if you have been even slightly self-aware or aware of history at all, even if you're young and you just barely became aware, Hitler created gun control. When he took all the people's guns, then he rounded the Jews up and killed them. He didn't do it ahead of time because everyone would have fought back. Everywhere you see misery and you see socialist states and you see this crap, there is gun control laws. Not just the stupid little laws that we have. No. Massive gun controls. If you're caught with a weapon, you are arrested and disappeared and put in prison. They don't want you to have any guns. They have them, but that's for your protection. See, and then they start spinning it and you're drug off into another courtroom on a misdemeanor. Basically, like going back to my last, podcast number 13, you're taken into another courtroom. You're no longer focusing on what's at hand. You're over here now talking about something else. And then once they got you there talking about whatever they want to talk to you about gun control, like, oh, how important it is to have background checks because we could save so many lives. But all the laws and all the shootings and all the people and all the guns involved were pretty much purchased legally through all these checks and balances that didn't work. That's just, on gun control and how they've always used it. And you can't do all the, you can do all the other seven things in this list, but you can't spring the trap as long as the populace is armed. Because, no matter what issue we talk about in social media, there's an overwhelming majority that something should be done about healthcare, but it shouldn't have been done the way they do it. We've had all of the discussions on poverty and debt. So in spite of what the white noise is telling us, if people are armed and they try to spring the trap, a lot of people are going to get shot and there will be a revolution and they won't win because they don't have enough people, and all their people, all their lackeys, they don't believe in guns either. So we outnumber them. So this is their key sticking point right now, but they're working on it. You can see it constantly. And that's why we can't give it up. And then, number five is welfare. Take control of every aspect of their lives. So when they say they're talking about you and me, their lives, all the plebs, food, housing, and income. So once again, this is happening and it's part of their game plan. So you got welfare. They've laid it out right here. We're going to take control of every aspect of people's lives. And you can see how well it's worked in some of the poorer neighborhoods where they're run by these liberal agendas and stuff like Detroit and Chicago and the projects and all that. Now, I'm not against helping poor people and giving a handout. But once you turn on the welfare faucet, you're not helping that person anymore. And in fact, you're hurting people that are truly in need because you're giving the money away in other areas to where it should not be given away. You know, if you have 10 people and they all get a dollar from you because that's all you can afford to take care of, and you find out five of them are abusing you and just laughing at you, then you stop giving them a dollar and you give the remaining five $2. Now you've really helped people. See, so it's not that anyone, no matter who you are, Republican or Democrat, we all want to help people. The way that they want to go about it maybe is opposed to us. But as long as you're helping people, then you're not going to get much of an argument out of me. But no, when they say the word welfare, what they mean is take control of every aspect of those people's lives, food, housing, and income. Just take control. Not to help them, but to take control. Education, take control of what people read and listen to. So, wow, what does that mean? Take control of what children learn in school, what they think. Well, if they totally took control, would you be listening to this podcast? I mean, if they took control of everything you listen to, aren't you listening to this podcast? I mean, right now you choose if you're going to listen to Rush Limbaugh or NPR. You're free to choose what you listen to, the podcasts you download, the programs you watch, the shows you get entertainment from. These are all choices you get to make. Well, what they're saying is, no, we're going to control what you read and listen to. So if you're an avid reader, could you read the books you read now? I mean, they had book burnings in countries that became socialist and communist. Do you think that was just because they wanted some heat and they were all cold? No. The government came along and said, you can't read this. Now, if you've never watched the movie with Andy Garcia about Cuba, I think it was The Lost City. It was one of the saddest movies I'd ever seen. It's about a family that lives in Cuba before Castro. And then Castro rises to power and it slowly starts to descend into socialism. Now, Cuba's a smaller island than the United States in North America. So this happened a little bit more expedited than it would here. But, you know, Andy Garcia owns a nightclub in Cuba. His family owns cigar and tobacco fields, and they're all fairly well off. Well, they don't come and just shut him down overnight in his club. But one day, the People's Army or whoever the hell they are with their red bands on. So they're listening to the band's rehearsal, and the gal that's in charge of this group of Nazis, is all I can consider them, Gestapo, says, you can't play the saxophone because it was created to cause this emotion. And Andy Garcia says, well, no, the saxophone has a great history and it creates certain kinds of music. And she's like, it is illegal to play a saxophone now. And that's it. It's over. You know, the argument's over. If we come here and you're playing a saxophone, you'll be arrested and shut down. So he wants to fight it, but it's like, well, now there's, you know, 20 people with her. They all buy into this bullshit, and it's now become the law of the land. So his uncle owns this big tobacco farm. Well, that becomes socialized, and, you know, it shows them taking control of this big family-owned tobacco farm that's been in the family generations, and they make great cigars, which I love a good cigar. And so his uncle ends up blowing his brains out. He just can't handle this. It's like there's no fight. See, they do it in a way to where there is no fight. They take over through regulations and stuff. And even in the very beginning, Castro won. These are my people. They just showed up and told you to stop doing that. Well, you're not just fighting the 10, 20 people that show up. They have the will of the people. Maybe not, but you're now fighting everyone's stupid idealism. So imagine going up against the white noise of social media and you're thinking to yourself, well, I must just be the screwball, because everyone thinks this way. And now here's a guy in an alphabet soup t-shirt and showing up in black Humvees with 10 other people heavily armed. I don't have a gun anymore because they took that. Telling me you can no longer grow grass in your yard because it's a waste of water and the people need the water. Now you might have spent 10 years getting your yard the way you want it. And now they've just told you, you can't do it. If you do, we will shut your water off or something worse. That's it. You're allocated this much. And you know they can do it because they just showed up with a show of force. So it was a good movie, Andy Garcia, Lost City. Everyone should watch it and just watch it from a perspective of, what if that was me? What if that was happening in my neighborhood? What could you even do about it? And the reality is not much once it gets to that point. And that's what, you know, why I'm talking about these rules by Saul Alinsky, how to create a socialist state, because it is their game plan. So number seven is religion. Remove the belief in God from the government and schools. Wow, we see that one happening every damn day. And if you study the cycle of history, you find that from freedom goes great religious beliefs and charity and all that. So it's part of a cycle of history. And whatever your religion is, see, it has nothing to do with Christianity or Judaism or Buddha or Hindu or Muslim religion. The rule specifically says remove the belief in God from schools and the government. Religion. They just want it gone. So it's happening. And then number eight, class warfare. Well, we've seen this before Obama took office, but it's usually initiated by the more liberal thinking folks in the media and politicians that we need to divide the people into wealthy and poor. Now, they don't come right out and say, well, we're going to take you and put you over here in the 1% pile, and then there's the 3%, and then say, you guys are all rich. If you make $150,000 a year, you're wealthy. And then there's all these poor people over here, because we've created this gigantic poverty level, and they're over here. And now it's you against them. And you just don't like people that are poor. You want to see their children die. Never mind that your side is funding abortion for the poor people to kill their children. Nope, you don't like them. You, the rich guy, don't like them. They're rich, but they never talk about that. So by doing class warfare, it causes more discontent. Here's their rule. Divide the people into wealthy and poor. This will cause more discontent, and it will make it easier to take, parentheses, tax, the wealthy with the support of the poor. Well, of course it is. If you've created a poor class or poverty to a level that's not maybe a majority, but a very loud minority, all of a sudden you're trying to argue your point of view, and they seem to have this fake pseudo high ground, you're not going to win. You know, I was reading a thing one time, it's like, why do you think it's a city government will attack an adult bookstore or a gentleman's club? I call them strip clubs, whatever. Well, because not that a majority of people in that community give two shits whether it's there or not. It's just harder for that business to say, wait a minute, you're taxing us unfairly. You're zoning us unfairly. You're doing this unfairly. Because what, are you going to go to a town council meeting representing the Sin City and show up in your suit and try to be respectful of their beliefs and go, this isn't fair because, you know, we're paying taxes too. We're paying sales taxes. We're paying all this stuff, just like any other business. And all the other side has to do, well, yeah, you know, you got plenty of that dirty, you know, Satan's money from all that. And it just makes it hard to defend something that is considered dirty. So when the poor people are all sitting there going, yeah, but we're starving, and you make 10,000 times more than your secretary. Well, how do you fight that? See, I mean, the fight had to start years ago when they started attacking capitalism. And there's another great Ayn Rand book in defense of capitalism, and it talks about it and how it's never been defended properly. And so now they seem to have the upper hand. They really don't, because they don't pay taxes. They don't have any money. They can't afford lawyers. They can't afford to defend themselves through marketing and the news and even producing programs and stuff on TV. They don't have any money, but they seem to take this moral high ground with them and go, you can't stand here. And it's like, not only can I stand there, I own the high ground you're standing on, but no one defends it. So this is what, you know, class warfare creates. Now, the reason I'm kind of babbling about this is, what's important to get from all of this is, how do we fight for America, the soul of America? How do we keep all these freedoms and liberties that I see on social media seems to be real important with a lot of people? There's as many people that want gun control as don't want gun control. But you know the argument's going to be lost eventually if enough people don't stand up. Well, how they're doing it is they're taking every single issue, like Saul Alinsky said, you isolate it and then you attack that. So you pick something apart. It doesn't matter if your friend is dressed really well to your party. If you can sit there and pick apart the socks he wore, and now all of a sudden you bring him down a little bit to where he's not as puffed up about how good he looks, you know, and then someone could go, yeah, that belt totally doesn't match. It has nothing to do with the overall issue of the fact that the guy is well-dressed. You just start nitpicking, and then you turn that nitpick into the argument. And then you find all the people that are supporting your side of the argument with this nitpick, and you put them over there, and then you give them some moral high ground to stand on, and then you attack the belt, and then you attack the buttons, and then you attack the sleeves, and the length of the sleeves, and the color of the material on the sleeves. And each time you do that, you create a group, and then you give them some moral high ground to stand on, and you fund them with media and bullshit, and then you start tearing the problem apart that way. So how do they do this? Oh my God, this is such a dire, devastating, dastardly plan. How can we ever fight it? Well, see, the beauty is, before we go into the game, we have their rules. They're right here. This is what they're trying to do. Healthcare. Well, they isolated the issue. There's poor people dying on the steps of hospitals. Well, first of all, I'd never seen anyone die on the street at the steps of a hospital in my 61 years ever. It's just bullshit. But that's the narrative. And people went, yeah, there's people dying on the steps of hospitals somewhere. No, never. But they got some moral high ground now, because if you say anything about it and defend yourself, you just want to see people dying in the streets. So they took that, and then these doctors are just performing these operations, and, you know, it's more profitable to take out someone's tonsils or their appendix. Oh, well, let's take out their appendix. That never, ever, ever, ever happened. I've had my appendix taken out. The doctor didn't sit there and charge my mom to do some other surgery. It didn't happen. Never happened. But you find one anecdotal story that may not even be backed up with facts, and you just shove it into that white noise, and then you just continue to amplify it with the media and all that. And if you don't sit there and look at it as judge, jury, and executioner and go, what a bunch of horseshit, you start to believe it. And then you think, well, you know, yeah, something needs to be done. Let's take, you know, because I'm not going to go through every one of these. Let's take taxation, you know, which is part of the class warfare thing, you know, that we need to tax people more. So the taxation argument is skin in the game. That's one of their isolated maneuvers. Well, everybody needs to have skin in the game. So if you are one of those people like I am that think that, you know, taxation's fine, it's constitutional. But I actually read the ruling on the 16th Amendment and how it applies to income tax. And you see that that's not the way it's being done now. And you look at it and you go, well, you know what? If I go back even before that, because see, taxation, income tax didn't really happen until in the 20s. Before that, there was no income tax ever. Okay, so if you lived in 1900, you didn't even think about income tax. Now, we still had the Industrial Revolution. We still had the greatest school system in America, in the world. We were doing great as a country. We were stepping up and rocking and rolling without income tax. And nobody back then had any freaking skin in the game. But now, even pundits on the news, even people that I thought I respected go, well, you know, the tax system is a little screwed up, but everyone needs to have skin in the game. See, it's buying into their bullshit argument on the other side, saying, well, don't yell at me because, no, I'm kind of with you here. We got some common ground. And then they start getting drug over into that courtroom. The simple fact is, no skin in the game. That's not how the country was set up. But whatever. Now the argument is skin in the game. Well, should it be a fair tax, a flat tax, a goat tax, whatever. The simple fact is, if we go back to the Constitution and we go back to where we had freedom and liberty and there was that organic growth in the economy to where you could do something outside the socialist greenhouse. Oh, I don't know, something stupid like a pet rock or Microsoft or Apple or Google. Do you think those would have grown in the socialist greenhouse? Do you think that in socialist country, you would have been able to go to someone and go, look, it's a pet rock. Isn't that cute? You know, and I'm selling these for $5, a dollar, whatever, a ruble. First of all, they would all look at you like you're crazy because they're starving to death in this great utopian society that they've allowed to happen. They're waiting in line for toilet paper, and a pet rock is just the dumbest thing. But let's assume people thought, that's kind of cute, you know, it actually made me laugh, and I don't get to laugh enough. You know, I need one. Everything is controlled by the government. It's a greenhouse. So someone's going to come along and go, we don't need no stupid pet rocks in our economy. What the hell are you thinking? You're distracting from the people. They need to be working for themselves, the people, because that's how it's all marketed. It's the greater good. Well, what is the greater good? Well, you, the people. Well, good. If you want me to have greater good, leave me the F alone. Nope. You don't understand because you're stupid. So there would have been no pet rock. See, the beauty of the economy, if you study basic economics, is it's organic. If you live on an island, what is your economy? Anything you can find and eat and any tool you might have to achieve that goal is your economy. Now, if another person gets stranded on that island who happens to know how to make things out of metal, and there's some metal on the island, and he makes a knife, and now you can carve it into a spear, now your economy is edged weapons, metalworking. So he goes, I'm going to make this knife. Oh, I got these coconuts. While you're doing that, I can do this, and I can get you some food so you can spend your time doing that. Oh, okay, that's a good deal. Now you have that economy. So it's organic. Some crazy, goofy college dropout says, I'm going to create Microsoft Windows. Well, it started with DOS, but anyway. And everyone's like, okay, well, whatever. And then all of a sudden it changes things and people are buying the shit out of it. Well, would he have got that passed a committee? No, but it just happened because he was free to do it and no one cared. He's doing it in his garage. And all of a sudden, like Apple, they have this product. And you know what? Wozniak and Jobs actually worked for Atari when they created the Apple computer. They worked there. And they took this idea to Atari because they worked for them. And they said, look, we've created a personal computer. Isn't this cool? People can do this shit at home. Whatever it did back then, which wasn't a whole lot. And Atari said, nobody needs a personal computer. And they turned the idea down. They quit and started Apple. I think the clowns at Atari were wrong. See, but in an organic community, in an organic economy, they were able to just quit and go market it themselves and produce it themselves and make billions of dollars. Now, if that was a socialist economy and Atari was the government and Atari said no, or the government said no, you're not free to do it. That's the difference. So all you Apple people out there that love Apple and you love Google and think this is great, and I love Apple too. I just can't afford their products. It would not exist if you had the pipe dream that you're getting high and smoking. If there was socialism and Bernie Sanders got his way and it would have happened 40 years ago, there would be no Microsoft. There would be no Apple. There would be no Google, no internet, none of this stuff. You wouldn't have your Android choice or your HTC choice or any of these choices. They would not exist. See, because in America, we were driving cars that rivaled the cars driven in Russia, because Russia had one car. I can't remember the name of it, but there was a joke in one of some thing I read one time by a Russian. He said, why does a Russian car have heated back windows? And you're like, well, you know, because it snows or whatever. He said, because it makes it easier to push when the glass is warm. See, because the cars ran so badly. But it's not like Chrysler could go, oh, you know, some guy, Chrysler Vitsky or whatever his name is in Russia, go, I got a plan for a better car than that. Shit, this thing would have air conditioning and heated glass and all-wheel drive and traction and whatever. And the government's like, no, we control that. And we think this is all you need. It's a car. It goes from point A to point B. What do you need a convertible for? Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you're right, because you have all the guns, and I sure as hell don't. So I guess we won't. And the proof of how badly it works, which was a good thing for America when we were in the war with Germany, Hitler had two associates that were working on airplanes. And one of them had actually invented the rocket engine and had a working, almost working prototype. And I don't remember all the details, but it's part of history, so just look it up. That had almost a prototype of a jet airplane. And one Hitler's better friends had the plane they were flying during the war. So the other guy said, we could really dominate the air with this. And Hitler said, no. That was it. End of story. No. No development. No Raytheon. No Northrop Grumman. No Motorola. No. Just no. And so, history tells us they lost the war. Now, historians and military historians will tell you, if they would have developed that other airplane, they would have had air superiority, and we probably would have never won that war. And it was only a 2-year window in there where that happened. But because he made a bad decision, which was good for us, we won the war and he lost it. But they were advanced enough to have air superiority. But because it was controlled by one guy, one mindset, one attitude, they lost. So that's how free markets work. They just grow organically, like that weird little tree on some island somewhere growing out of the side of the island. And it's just doing fine. Nobody would plant a tree there, but it grew there. And that's how the economy works. It's organic. So that's a little off topic. And I could go that way and probably bore you all to death with all these silly little ideas that I have. But the simple fact is, we have their game plan. We know their master plan. By looking at these things, we can help turn down the volume of the white noise and filter out to where we can get some information. And so when you look at every issue, they're all, you could probably boil them down to these 8 things. Because trust me, this is their game plan. This is their rules. This is what they are doing to bring about socialism and destroy America. That is their plan. Now, if you can't accept that they have a plan, then you're an idiot and shouldn't be in the fight. But let's accept the fact that there are diametrically opposed people out there that want to destroy America. They might not even be Americans, but this is their plan because they hate us for whatever reason. Just like you might have an adversary in life that you never did anything to other than maybe one thing that you might have said possibly that they took offense to, and now they're your adversary and you don't even know why. But it happens, and all they're going to do, every step of the game, control healthcare, control and raise debt, raise poverty levels, gun control, welfare, education, religion, class warfare. What's the argument about debate or debt? Okay, read what they said about debt. Oh, now we're talking about gun control because there was another mass shooting. Read what they say and how they're going to control gun control. Oh, we got some issues with Common Core, education. Everything you see on Facebook and Twitter and social media is one of these 8 things. And that's how they're doing it. And if you sit there and go, oh, I wonder why, is like asking why one team wants to win the other one in the Super Bowl. Because that's their plan. To sit there and go, well, if you control guns and you take away all our guns, then we could fall into communism. That's like saying, if he catches that pass, we'll lose the game. Of course, that's their game plan. You're in a battle for freedom and liberty. The founding fathers knew it, and they told us to always guard against this kind of thing. Protect your liberty. So it's out there. There is evil out there. They don't want you to know it. Oh, I wonder why. Because of religion. Remove the belief in God from government and schools. Well, I wonder why they're pushing this Common Core thing. How do I determine? You know, I kind of like old Jeb Bush. He seems to be a nice guy. Seems to care. You know, what about this Common Core? Oh, education. Take control of what people read and listen to. Take control of what children learn in school. Oh, okay. Got that one figured out. So if you buy into the bullshit, then you've just bought into one of their rules, one of their steps, one of their plans. So anything you see in social media, veterans, that's a big thing. You know, all these things I'm seeing nowadays, you know, they'll spend all this money for illegals, but they won't even take care of the veterans who fought and died for America. Why is it this way? Poverty. Yeah. Increase poverty levels so high that it's possible to control the people. So now, and it could also fall into welfare, and it could fall into class warfare. So, oh, okay, that's what they're doing. Oh, now I understand. See, reading all this becomes kind of boring now because now I understand it. It's like, oh, that's really neat, and I'd like to click like and send a response. But the simple fact is, it's just part of the white noise, and it doesn't do any good because your friends are just passing the noise around. They're helping amplify it. It's not that it's wrong. I mean, it's nice to see all these issues. And if you just look at them and you took everything, let's see, if you just took every article and thing that you texted and shared and looked at and tweeted and Reddit it and whatever they call all that social movement, and you took the whole week and you boiled it down and put it in little piles and go, this has to do with this and this has to do with this. And here's some guns and here's some veterans and here's some funny cat jokes. And boiled it down, the main issues would fall under these 7-8 things because that's the way it's set up. And they're important key issues, and they overlap into every other aspect of your life. So this is how you need to be a participant in the court of public opinion. And that's why I wanted to expand on that episode, because it doesn't just have to do with elections. And I know people, and I know even me, that I won't put the two together unless I link them and say, hey, this has to do with the court of public opinion. I wanted to expand on it. So we need to look at their game plan. Wow, Mark, how do we do that? It's so complicated. I'm busy. I mean, I have 2 jobs and 4 kids, and I'm working my ass off, and so does my wife. And I barely get, you know, maybe an hour in a day to peruse the social media. And then I come home, and after the kids go to bed, I let the news wash over from, you know, me for maybe an hour, and I watch my favorite program, and it's more of comedy, and then I'm done, and I'm beat. That's it. I go to bed and start over. Well, how do you do it? You just Google Saul Alinsky, SaulAlinsky, how to create a socialist state. Print it out and stick it on the wall. Because you're an American. See, even though you're worn out and you're tired, you're not done fighting. You know, the old quote that I had in one of my episodes that I just love is, you know, upon the plains of hesitation lie the bones of countless millions who on the verge of victory laid down to rest and were overtaken. That's how it works. So I know you're tired. I'm tired. I don't have time to you know, rub 2 nickels together halftime. But we have to do it. And so we need to simplify it. You need to automate it. That's it. Do like Henry Ford. Automate it. So you put these on your wall, and then you just read them and go, oh, that kind of has to do with this one. Number 4 is easy, gun control. And then if it's opposed to freedom and liberty and the Constitution, then it's been automated. I'm not going to like that. I'm not going to share it. I'm not going to tweet it. I'm not even going to buy into it. I don't believe in it. And in fact, I'm going to fight against that bullshit. You know, they hate the NRA. The NRA fights for your freedom of the Second Amendment, which was created. The NRA was created to help black people get guns in America. I know a lot of racist people probably don't even know that, but it was created to help the slaves be able to protect themselves after the Civil War. That's how, you know, that was its purpose. So when you're being the judge and you're going, this is admissible and this is not, try to look at it this way. If this debate on gun control, which is a debate on the Second Amendment, which is constitutional, would they fight the same way to destroy the First Amendment? Do we need a national registry of all the people that studied journalism or writing in high school? I mean, come on, let's go to 18 years old. High school, college, junior college. Maybe studying to be a writer, because you have freedom of speech. But, well, you know, there should be some caveats there. You know, I think you should have enough sense and maybe studied enough about journalism to where you understand hate speech and you don't offend people when you're talking. So I think there should, you know, maybe you might not have to be licensed to post things on, you know, Facebook and YouTube, but we should have a debate about that. Oh, you wouldn't hear that shit about free speech. No, because that's where the media, that's where they live. That's the slime they dwell in. So they don't ever want to see any of the same rules that they want to apply to the Second Amendment apply to the First Amendment. So, you know, when somebody's spewing to you about, well, you know, I don't mind if, you know, if you buy a gun, as if it's any of their freaking business. But, you know, I think that, you know, people should at least have some basic training and understanding and safety and what guns are used for. And maybe if they have a purpose, like if they're into hunting or target shooting. Oh, okay. So now that you've said that with your First Amendment right, should I tell you the same thing? I don't mind that you have an opinion on what I'm doing. But I think that it would be nice before people just start a conversation that maybe they have a little bit of training on how to present an argument, maybe take a small journalism class, because it's for safety. Because if you say something that offends somebody, they might haul off and hit you, you know, and you could cause a lot of problems, you know, with people. And now, you know, it's so complex. And so I think that, you know, before you can exercise your first right, I think, well, first of all, you should at least fill out some form to where we know who you are and what you think and how you feel about these things before we're going to let you actually talk to more than yourself about this. Say, oh, no, that would never happen. So if you need a way to go, oh, are they just spinning this shit? Would they be fighting it the same way if it had to do with them? Oh, no. See, then now you know. So when you're trying to figure shit out, and you're like, oh my God, it's so complicated. Do I vote for this Yahoo or that Yahoo? Do I buy this or that? Do I, whatever. All the decisions we make. Because when you're driving, you make about 300 decisions a minute or something crazy like that. Just go to your How to Create a Social Estate by Saul Alinsky and read it and go, oh, wow, yeah, that has to do with welfare. Why would they do that? Oh, welfare, it sounds so good. Oh, we're helping the poor people. Why did you create welfare, Mr. Government? Oh, to take control of every aspect of their life, food, housing, income. Oh, so it's not warm and fuzzy? No, it's to take control. Well, you don't care that kids are going hungry? No, to take control. We created the hunger. Oh, through poverty. Yeah, them greedy rich people, right? No, we the government created poverty. Why'd you do that? To increase the poverty levels as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and they won't fight back, stupid. It's like, oh, well, poverty's horrible. You know, I don't like seeing poor people. Well, we created it because it's easier to fight them. So we like poor people. Oh, wow. Well, you know, if the debt ceiling wasn't, you know, being raised, and maybe if we could get debt in control or allow the government to spend more money, then we could help the poor and those on welfare. No, we're increasing the debt limit to unsustainable levels. That way we're able to increase taxes and this will produce more poverty. Once again, more control. Oh, well, I thought it was an important issue, you know, debt ceiling and the debt clock and all that. You know, yeah, to all you plebs down there, sure it is. But no, we're going to increase it more because it creates more poverty. It destroys the middle class and therefore creates more welfare. Oh, well, what about education? Maybe if we just paid teachers more, we'd have better education. It's like, oh, okay. So the politician go, yeah, we're taking control of what people read and listen to. And by doing that, we control what kids learn and how they think in school. Oh, well, more money would make that great. It's like, no, we already got control of that. We just want more money for the schools because it increases the debt limit, which kills the middle class, which creates more poverty and welfare. Oh, so you don't give two shits about the children. No. In fact, we want to control your children so that way when they come out of college, they are on our side. And they think these eight things are just a great idea. because we don't read it to them this way like Saul Alinsky wrote them. Oh, how do you sell that to the American people? Well, there's people that are, they can't afford that. Healthcare's expensive, you know. Oh, so you care? Yes, I care a lot. I care about controlling healthcare. Oh, well, look at all them poor people. Do you care about poverty? Oh, yes. Poverty is one of the greatest blights on the American landscape. When you just look at America, the richest nation in the world, and you go, why is there poverty? Oh, so maybe we should pay more taxes. That would be great. Because we're at war with poverty. Did you know that? It's our goal to stamp out of poverty. Oh, what did Saul Alinsky tell you to do? Oh, increase the poverty levels as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you're providing everything for them. Oh, so that's the other side of the coin. So what did you say about gun control? Well, this is just horrible. I mean, there's our children are being killed. Oh, like in Chicago? No, they're in school. We have gun-free zones to protect them. It's all about your protection. And it's them bastards over there at the NRA. It's their fault. Oh, now if you're listening to words coming out of the other side of his mouth, remove people's ability to defend themselves from the government. They won't say that. They'll tell you, oh, this is horrible. How many more of these slaughters do we have to see before you let me take your gun so I can keep you from fighting the government? Oh, quite a few more, actually. So this is how you have to. What's the old expression? Read between the lines. So when a politician goes, oh, class warfare, you know, them damn rich people. I mean, I'm not saying me because I'm a rich person. No, them damn rich people. The 1, 5, 10%ers, you know, them. Now, we're going to tax you if you make over $100,000 a year. But no, them, we're going to call it them damn rich people. Okay, great. So we're going to divide them into wealthy and poor and see. Now you're poor. Oh, I wondered what the hell was going on. So I'm poor. So then I can go stand over here on the moral high ground? Yes, you can, buddy. You go right over there and you wave your freak flag of them rich-ass people. Oh, but I know that guy. He's not that rich. He's rich. Oh, well, F him too. All right, so that's, I don't know. I can't explain enough that they have a game plan. And we actually know it, which is just totally cool. Ask any military guy. If you knew exactly what your enemy was going to do tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., would you be prepared for it or would you just be sitting around drinking coffee waiting for it to happen? And they will tell you, no, we would be all up on that shit at 4:30 before they have their coffee and do their plan. We're going to skip coffee break and kick their butt at 4 because we know they're coming at 6. So we have the plan. They've written it. See, they've come out with it. They're ballsy enough now to where they can just set it out there. And they didn't plan on it, but then the internet came along organically, and bam, you know, now it's all out there. So they go, oh yeah, yeah, this Saul Alinsky's a great guy. See, our president studied him. He's a good guy. They were neighbors, or whatever, you know. Oh, okay. So then they make it not so bad. But this is their rules. You know, I'm gonna come over your house at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm gonna drive a big truck through your property gate, and then I'm gonna rob you the night before so you don't have any guns to fight me. And then I'm gonna burn your house down so you come out. And then I'm gonna round you up and kill and rape your children and wife. And then we're gonna take all your shit. And then you're gonna be poor. And then we'll probably kill you anyway. Oh, okay. So if I'm awake the night before, I can stop you from stealing my guns. Yeah, but you're not going to do that because you're stupid. Okay. And then if I maybe have some shooters at the gate, so when you try to run it over, I can take you guys out before you run over my fancy gate. Yeah, but you're not going to do that because you're too stupid. It's like, and you don't know. See, because I didn't tell you. Shh. You don't know I'm going to do that. And then you're going to set my house on fire. Okay. So then I'll have my fire system up and running, and it's all concrete blocks, so it doesn't burn that well. And then you're going to force me out of the house through the fire, but if I don't leave, then so you're going to come in and kill my wife and children after you rape them. Okay, so this is what I'm going to do. See, now that I know all that, I can make a plan. So I'm not trying to make light out of it, but they've told it. we're going to do these things. And history has told us that this is the cycle. So if we input our plan at the right time of the cycle, then we have better odds of winning that fight. So here's the cycle of history. It teaches us all this shit. If I could freaking find my stuff somewhere. So this is their plan, and we know it. See, they've had to publish it. So the Tetler cycle of history, which has repeated itself so many times in history, it's not even worth arguing about. Go from bondage to spiritual faith. So slaves usually end up becoming spiritual, and then they grow a ball sack, and they get some courage. And after that courage and the spiritual kick in, they actually create liberty. They fight and they win. With that liberty comes abundance. But with abundance comes selfishness. With selfishness comes complacency. With complacency comes apathy. With apathy becomes dependence. And bam, you're back in slavery. So we are in that cycle somewhere, and I'm sure all of these rules that they've created, they look at it and they go, well, you know, we left it, you know, England, and we went out of slavery and all that stuff, and we told them to go bite sand, you know, screw you. And we had a lot of spiritual faith, and that's why the pilgrims came over here to worship as they saw fit. And they had a lot of courage, and they came here, and they fought England, and we had liberty. Bam. With that freedom and liberty came a great deal of abundance. Before the tax code, we had abundance. Now the taxes came in, and we had, you know, selfishness. So they're like, we need to plug in this game plan somewhere in here to where it will take root best. So we've already got the tax thing set up. We're blaming the selfish bastards, and that's why they need to pay more. I think between maybe complacency and apathy, or apathy and dependence, we need to be on this part of the circle here, maybe these three things, because we can create the dependence with the welfare program. And the selfishness, we can divide and conquer. And so if we put it in here, it will take root. And once it grows, that's you and me, are back in bondage. So you can look at this cycle of history, and you can see how it happens, just kind of like an electron flying around an atom. It just goes around and around and around. And it makes a lot of sense. And it's happened throughout history, always. You can go back thousands and thousands of years. This was the cycle. That's why this guy Tetler created it. Because he's looking at it and go, oh, birds fly south in the winter. Well, how do you know? Well, because every winter they fly south. Are you sure? Yeah, see, there they are. Was it winter? Yeah, pretty much. Well, I bet they won't do it next year. Yeah, they will. See, so this is the cycle of history. So you go from bondage, spiritual faith, courage, liberty, abundance, selfishness, compliance, apathy, dependency, back into bondage. Now, so we've gotten past all that, and we are somewhere in there, and Saul Alinsky and the Rules for Radicals and the Socialist and Marxism and all that plugged in. When Russia fell to socialism and communism, they were at a period of great abundance, and all he had to do is know that the next step in line is people are going to become selfish. Stepped in and said, look at these selfish bastards. People were like, I really don't care, because we're complacent. And then there's apathy, which means I really can care less. Just leave me the frick alone. And then dependence, and bam, they were slaves and back in bondage again. So they have a game plan. They know when they're going to plug it in and start implementing it, which they've been doing for quite a while, because we are in that cycle and we're moving around, and history doesn't really wait. It just kind of moves around, and there's always those people. They're selfish too. You know, they can talk about the greedy, rich capitalists, but they're just as selfish because they want control. They want to control you because they're selfish pricks also. They have complacency. They just use your selfishness as a tool. They destroy you with your own values. They go, look at all these selfish people. And you're like, yeah, you know, we used to be a really spiritual people. Well, yeah, that was, you know, 100 years ago in the cycle of history. That's past. Don't you want to be like them? Yeah. Oh, well, maybe if we took all their money, we could help the poor. You want to help the poor? Yeah. You want to be like those spiritual people? Yeah. Let's take their money, because I'm a selfish prick and I want to control them and you. Oh, okay, cool. Let's do it. So we have the plan. It's right there. They laid it out. All we got to do is read it and go, oh, what's their next step? Now, granted, they haven't put together the steps. They have, actually. It's on the internet, what they're going to do in each phase of the operation, which requires you putting on your judge's hat and actually going and analyzing it. But on the simplest term, you have the cycle of history. It repeats itself. We're in it. We're heading right toward bondage again. We have the rule, you know, how to create a socialist state. They're saying, we're going to do these eight things. And you can look at it and go, oh, yeah, you are doing that. Okay, where are we? Well, we have them all checked off because people are so, they put on earphones because the white noise is so light. All we have left to do is take your guns. And once we do that, we can turn around and point our guns at you and say, now everybody start pushing the cart in the name of the greater good of Mother America. And then it's over. That is their last tactic that they're having a hard time with. That is their sticking point, because we don't give up our guns very, very easily. And a lot of people in America, in spite of all these bullshit crying stories on the, you know, social media, 70, 80, 90% of people in America want to keep their Second Amendment. They might not be sociopathic killers. They just want to have a gun to protect themselves. They don't even like hunting. They don't really care about target shooting. They don't really care about any of that shit. They just want a gun the same as they want a spare tire. My four-wheel drive has a spare tire. Not because I go four-wheel driving all the time, because I have a spare tire. So it's a sticking point to them, and they're having a hard time with it. But you can read the other ones. It's not that damn complicated. They're right there. They've got health care. It's done deal. They've got poverty. It's on the rise. It's a done deal. Debt. Don't even talk about debt. They got welfare? Yeah. Those are debates all the time on the internet. Should we drug test them? Blah, blah, blah. Welfare's all right. They got that. It's done. Check. Education? Check. Religion? Yeah, we pretty much got that under control. Check. Class warfare? Yep. Check. Okay. What's left on the list? The big one. They're all still armed. We've got most of them kind of leaning that way. And I think if we had enough push, we could push the remaining dissenters off the edge, but they're still armed and they're not going to just go willingly into the night. So that is the biggest issue facing America, no matter how they spin it, whether it's a mass shooting or some dumbass shoots his foot off or somebody gets a shot off at somebody important, whatever it is, that will always be the one: gun control. How they spin it, how they push it, how they market it will all be just a lot of subterfuge for that one thing. We want to take your guns, because the minute we do it, everything else is in place and we can just shove you in a corner into the ovens and gas you and say, shut up. There's nothing you can do about it. We win, you lose, sucker. That's the plan. So don't think that you're dealing with nice people. When you hear all these people talking all warm and fuzzy, and it's like, it's for the poor. Read their own words. Control the people through healthcare. Control the people, and they won't fight back with poverty. Debt controls the people. Gun control, well, they just call it that, control. Welfare, take control of every aspect of their life. Education, control what the people read and listen to. Religion, take control and get it out of government and schools. Class warfare, it's all about control. Every other sentence has the word control. So you're dealing with a sociopath group that will smile and literally stab you in the back while they look at you and say, I care. Why are you bleeding out? You got a knife in me. That wasn't me. So they are maniacal. And when you wonder, why are they saying these things? It sounds so pretty. It's all about control. Don't get confused. And once they got their guns, our guns, away from us, and some way of controlling that, whether they take them all, or they just make ammo illegal, or they make it so hard that every whiny-ass bitch and person on the road's like, he's got a gun, it scares me. And you just kind of quit carrying it, because you're just like, oh, God, I'm so tired of dealing with these people at the store. It's like, oh, my God, quit crying. One of those methods is going to work, and then they've won. It's that simple. That's why I am a prepper. People wonder, why the hell are you a prepper? Because history tells us through this cycle that we're going to end up back in bondage again. And before that happens, there's going to be a lot of problems. So this is why I prepare. And learning these things is part of my preparation. I mean, I'm a minimalist. I just need to be able to acquire water, food, fire, and shelter. I mean, it'd be nice to have a weapon or two, but if they take them all, I can still survive under a rock in the middle of somewhere where they don't catch me, and I can live out my last days at least free enough to choose whether I boil my water or not. But it has to do with our lives. Prepping isn't a bunch of kooks that are worried about a specific item happening. They're a bunch of highly educated people. The average prepper has one college degree, understudies in college, makes good money. They're just smart enough to look at it and go, I see something brewing. I have a gut feeling that this isn't going to turn out right. I want to be prepared for it, whatever it is. And the government's the biggest prepper on earth. So their military geniuses say, prepare for this. Here's a scenario. Prepare for that. Here's a scenario. Prepare for that. Here's a scenario. Prepare for that. So we're not being goofy. We're just looking at it. And gun control is the straw that will break America's back. When they get that, it is over. And because talking is just subterfuge for the big plan. You know, they'll let us all talk all day long. But once they take your gun, then you're not going to be able to talk about it anymore. They'll just come in and shoot you if you're not reading, listening to, and thinking the way they want you to. And you'll still have to get up in the morning and go to work. But you won't have to worry about buying a ticket on the bus. You're still going to go to work at a shitty job that you don't even like. The same as it is here. So this is not to say that all politicians are trying to turn America into a socialist state. And that's the question that, even while I'm listening to this, kind of begs to be answered. Well, Mark, you're saying that all of these politicians are out to screw us. No, I think that's part of the overall big game plan by the shadow man or whoever it is that wants America to become a socialist state. The politicians are just doing their job and they're buying into the argument for or against a certain issue. But when someone comes along and says, here's a lot of money for a project, here's a lot of money for your family, or here's a job title for your wife or your son who needs work, and we're going to make them the CEO of this innocuous corporation, then they do these things that individually each little vote and each little chip in it starts to wear it down, but they just see it as like a little tiny chip. And they go, oh, well, that's not that big of a deal. In fact, it actually kind of is how I feel about this issue. So there's someone steering the boat, and all the politicians are just the crew down below deck, don't even know what's going on. And when they're asked to do one thing or the other, they do it. And if they have an issue and they go, well, if we go turn right, then something bad might happen. Then whoever's steering the boat goes, no, I got this all figured out, and good job, here's some money. And they're like, ah, great, extra rations. And they turn left or they turn right. So that's kind of how I see it as happening. And so I'm not saying all of our politicians are playing by these rules for a socialist state, but they're being played by whoever wants this to happen. And if you don't think there's some bigger evil whatever going on out there that wants to see America destroyed, then you really do have your head in the sand, because there's always been enemies, always, all throughout history. No matter what you built, there's someone out there that is your adversary that wants to see you fail. And if they have the power and the means and the motive to do it, they will do it. It's that simple. And you can study history as far back as you want to go. There's always someone that wants to see someone else fail, whether it's a person, a group, or a country. It's become their adversary, and they want it to fall for maybe the stupidest reason, but they're out there. So that's kind of how I wanted to maybe sum up, you know, this 8 steps to a socialist state. And it's not the politicians, even though it really is the politicians. Have a great day. Enjoy the apocalypse.